Series a little bit more. We're in the middle of a series called I Am, where we're unpacking the different names of God, and we're trying to learn more about God's character. And the reason for that is found in Psalm chapter 9, verse 10. This is my passion for this series. It says this: those who know your name will put their trust in you. That's it. That's the bottom line for this whole series, about 10 or 11 weeks leading up to Christmas, is that those who know His name will put their trust in Him. That's my prayer for you. That's my prayer even for myself. And I have found this series actually very challenging, because God is so big. He's so beyond description, so impossible to articulate and describe, that each week I'm thinking, how in the world am I going to do this? How am I going to show them just a little bit of who God is? Because I know it's going to fall short. I know I'm not adequate. I know I'm not going to get it right. And to be able to do a good enough job to let you see how big God is. But I hope to stretch you just a little bit so that you'll do three things. First of all, as you see His name, it's going to reveal things about Him that will deepen your understanding, that your intellect. And then I hope that your love for Him will grow. That's your heart. And then I'm hoping that your faith in Him will be strengthened. That's your activity, because you're going to step out in faith. I was thinking about stepping out in faith, or having faith, or growing faith. Do we have any year 12s with us tonight in the house? I see one. Yep. The rest are in bed. Right? Do you know that year 12s, Christian, not Christian, all over the country right now, are praying. If they've never prayed a prayer in their life, they're praying, because they're about to go into exam season. And they realize that they're stressed, because over a course of 2 weeks, right, Harry? About 2 weeks, you're going to take a series of tests. And that's going to decide whether, as a human being, you are a success or a failure for the rest of your life. Right? That's what your teachers are telling you anyway, right? 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 We all know that's actually not true, but it feels like it right at this moment. As we are thinking about the names of God and who God is, my mind went back to high school, and they told me something when I was in year 12. We had a theme for our class, and the theme was, if you believe it, you can achieve it. Yeah. Doesn't that sound nice? I believed in a lot of rubbish back then. But is that true? If you believe it, you can achieve it. Anybody, is that true? Anybody agree with that? No, it's rubbish. Even if your hand's halfway up, it's rubbish. All right? Think about it. If I believed in year 12 that I could be the Prime Minister of Australia one day, right? Who would want it? But anyway, if I believed that, and there were thousands of other people in my generation time frame, that span, that also believed that, is that possibly going to be true for all those people? Of course not. There can only be one at a time. There's only be a few in my generation. And that. When we think about our futures and our destinies, and you young people, you still got so much ahead of you. I want you to turn to the person beside you tonight. And I want you to tell them, young people, tell the person beside you what you want to be when you grow up. Older people, tell people what you wanted to be when you grow up, or still maybe you have those aspirations. Take about 30 seconds and chat about that. Okay. How many of you are going to need some counseling after that short conversation, because you realized that if you believe it, you can't achieve it, isn't really true? Because now you're on that end and you're looking back and you're thinking, wow, uh-oh, right? Hey, you can continue those conversations over a cup of coffee later, so I just gave you a conversation starter. How many of you said, I want to be in charge of something? You want to be the boss? All right, good job. Thanks for your honesty, bro. All right, right. I see that in you. Praise God. Bless God. Most of us, nobody said, I want to be at the bottom. I want to be, you know, in the mailroom. I want to be the rubbish man. Although rubbish is a big industry, you make a lot of money. But anyway, that's a whole other conversation. Most of you probably said, like Simba, I just can't wait to be king, right? Right? Do you know one of the titles that God goes by is King of Nations? We're going to unpack that a little bit tonight as it is expressed in Jeremiah. But before we get there, We go back to the burning bush. If you were here a couple of weeks ago, you know that God met Moses there. And he knew Moses by name. So the God that knows his name, he heard Israel's cry, so he listened to Israel. And then he used Moses to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt. And then they ended up, they were in this battle with the Amalekites that Justin told us last week. And they set up an altar. And they named that place Jehovah Nissi or Yahweh Nissi. The Lord is our banner, as a memorial so they would remember what God had done for them. Now, when the Israelites were in Egypt, they had learned some habits from the Egyptians, or at least observed some habits. The Egyptians worshipped idols, all right? And the Israelites had observed that, they knew about that. And in one incident especially, Moses was up on Mount Sinai talking to God, getting the Ten Commandments from God. And he came down the mountain, and the Israelites had created this golden calf. And they were bowing down and worshiping it. All right, so they had learned this whole thing of idol worship from the Egyptians and through life, and they decided that that was going to be their God. Thus, the T-shirt tonight, the false idols T-shirt, right? Bought it special for you guys tonight because I love you so much, and I want you to remember false idols, false idols, false idols, false. That's the bottom line tonight, false idols, right? Got it? You can go home. There you go. Anyway, no. So many years later, they're in the Promised Land. And the nations around them are actually worshiping idols. And there's a guy called Jeremiah. Jeremiah was a prophet. When you were saying what you want to be when you grow up, did anybody say, I want to be a prophet? No? That would be a silly thing to want to be. Okay? The prophets in the Old Testament, they didn't want to be prophets. It was something that was thrust upon them. And they usually weren't very popular guys because or girls because they usually spoke of doom and gloom and judgment. They usually told people, you're doing all this wrong, and God's going to judge you. He's going to smack you around. He's going to take care of business because you are bad people. That was usually the prophet's job. So Jeremiah is one of these prophets, and he's observing the idolatry all around them. And he sees the propensity of the nation of Israel to adapt to the nations around them. And he says this in Jeremiah chapter 10, beginning in verse 3. Their ways are futile and foolish. They cut down a tree and a craftsman carves an idol. They decorate it with gold and silver and then fasten it securely with hammer and nails so it won't fall over. Their gods are like helpless scarecrows in a cucumber field. They cannot speak. They need to be carried because they cannot walk. Do not be afraid of such gods, for they can neither harm you nor do you any good. Now, this section of the in the book of Jeremiah is actually a poem, and Jeremiah is using sarcasm. He's mocking them for worshiping idols. So he's called out the idol worshipers from the other nations, and he's challenging Israel, don't go down that track. You do not want to do that. That would be a waste of your time. It would be futile. He's mocking their process. He says this. He says, they go and they cut down a tree. Notice he didn't say they grew the tree, because God grew the tree. They cut down the tree. Then the craftsman carves the idol out of it. Then they overlay it with gold and silver, and then they dress it up. And then he says, they put nails in the feet of it. They have to nail it down so it won't fall over, and then they say, this is my God. Yeah, you laugh. It's okay. It's funny. Jeremiah was painting a picture that's hilarious. He says, it's helpless. They're helpless like scarecrows in a field of cucumbers. Anybody a farmer? No farmers. All right, there we go. Did you ever put a scarecrow in your cucumbers? You use scarecrows, but not in your cucumbers. Anyway, I just found that remarkable that Jeremiah said that. Anyway, that entertained me all week long. See, people like a God that they can see and touch and that they can create because it's visible, it's physical, and there's something about that being able to see it makes it more real for them. But I believe the reason that they actually want to create those idols, their own God, is because then they're the creator and they're not subject to the creator. Big difference there when you've created your own gods. He says, they can't hurt you or help you. It's foolish. These idols are pointless. Then he goes on in verse 6, wanting them to contemplate the glory and majesty of the true living God. It says this, Lord, there is no one like you, for you are great, and your name is full of power. Who would not fear you, O King of nations? That title belongs to you alone. among all the wise people of the earth, and in all the kingdoms of the world, there is no one like you. He is called here the King of Nations. Jeremiah is declaring this to Israel, and it was important for them to hear this because he's not only the God of Israel, he is the King of Nations. This would have brought back to their minds when he told Abraham in Genesis and repeated that promise over and over throughout the book of Genesis that he would make them a great nation and all the nations of the earth would be blessed because of them. So he says he's the king. He's the ruler of all the nations. Do you know the King of all the nations transcends cultures? We're celebrating our diversity today, and that's why we did the song and we got name tags, and it's a bit of fun to realize how diverse we are. But do you realize that God, the King of nations, transcends all of our differences? However you grew up, whatever culture you came from, whatever your habits were, and the way you do things in your home country and culture, God transcends all of that. He is greater than all that. He is the ruler over all nations, it says. And then it says, he is elite and unique. It says that title belongs only to you. If you said that when you're talking about what you want to be when you grow up, I want to be king, well, you're still going to be limited. Because if you want to be the king of Australia or the king of another country, you might get to there one day, probably not, but you might. But God is still the King of the nations, and he's the only one that can have that title. You would still be subject to him even if you were the king. A.W. Tozer, great theologian, said this, "The essence of idolatry is the entertainment of thoughts about God that are unworthy of him." You know, we most often, I believe, have far too small a view of God. And that's what Tozer was talking about. He said, it's idolatry to think less of God than who he is. Now that gets me in trouble with Mr. Tozer because my mind is not capable of thinking of God as big as he is. And I think that's a healthy thing to make sure that I stay there, that I realize he's bigger than I, that I'm always falling short of being able to describe him or imagine him because he's that amazing and wonderful, incredible. Jeremiah continues to try to paint this accurate view of God. In verse 10, he says this, "But the Lord is the only true God. He is the living God and the everlasting King. The whole earth trembles at his anger. The nations cannot stand up to his wrath. Say this to those who worship other gods, your so-called gods who did not make the heavens and earth, will vanish from the earth and from under the heavens. But the Lord made that earth by his power, and he preserves it by his wisdom. With his own understanding, he stretched out the heavens. When he speaks in the thunder, the heavens roar with rain. He causes the clouds to rise over the earth. He sends the lightning with the rain and releases the wind from his storehouses. The whole human race is foolish and has no knowledge. The craftsmen are disgraced by the idols they make, for their carefully shaped works are a fraud. These idols have no breath or power. Idols are worthless. They are ridiculous lies. On the day of reckoning, they will all be destroyed." So what makes this King of Nations greater than idols? A couple of things he points out here. First of all, he is the creator, not the created. Because he is the creator, he is king over everything. He is not created. The idols are created by people's hands. Then it says, even nature is subject to him. Did you see that? The thunder, the rain, the lightning, the wind, all is subject to God. These other idols, they would build idols and say that this is the God of rain or this is the God of the sun and all of that. But those gods were powerless. It reminds me of the prophet Elijah, another prophet that didn't want to be a prophet, but he got roped into it. And he was talking smack to the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. You remember that? Yeah. Right? And he said, oh, you need to yell louder because your God can't hear you. Maybe he's taking a break. Maybe he's at the toilet, you know, and that kind of thing. He's on holiday. But their gods couldn't respond. These false gods can't respond. Our God can. Idols have no power. They're worthless and ridiculous. So what does that mean about the people who make the idols and the people who worship the idols? Well, the people who make the idols are frauds. You know why they're making the idols? So they can sell the idols. They're entrepreneurs. They want to make money, right? That's why they do that. They're also stupid, but the ones that worship the idols, Jeremiah says, they're foolish. They're foolish for doing that. When they've got the living and true God over here, over them, to settle for worshiping an idol is just foolishness, he says. He said, the ones that are worshiping them, they're spending their time and money and attention on a useless idol that can't help them. And then they're trying to appease that idol, that God of their own, because they're afraid that idol can hurt them. It's foolishness, he says. Now, all of this seems a bit irrelevant to us, right? Anybody an idol worshiper? Did you go out yesterday and buy an idol from the little idol shop and set it up in your home, nail it down so it wouldn't move? Nobody? Really? Okay. Wow. Well, for a lot of us, we've traveled a little bit. And I remember the first time I went to South Asia, and I'm visiting temples because that's what you do when you go to South Asia. And I remember seeing some of these statues and these idols, and they would have around them like a table or a big altar. And there would be all kinds of stuff laid out there. Bottles of water, food, bread that was molding, and just anything you can think of. They would even put like chopsticks and things like that there as well. I guess the idols needed chopsticks to eat the bread, but they couldn't because the bread was moldy. But anyway, it didn't make any sense. And it just seemed like so much waste. And then the one that really tugged at my heartstrings was I saw kids' toys offered to idols. And where I saw that was in a village where people would have had little to nothing. They didn't have a whole lot of stuff. But they bought toys for their kids and then gave them to idols. And their kids didn't have toys. How foolish is that? Because they're trying to appease these idols. And the idols weren't playing with the toys. And the idols weren't eating the food. The idols weren't drinking the water. Because they can't. Because they're stone and wood and statues. Let's bring it a little bit closer to home because, again, is anybody doing that here in Werribee, Hopper's Crossing? No. When's the last time you got in a taxi or an Uber? Anybody? Yeah. Chances are, more times than not, there's a little statue on the dash. It's beads hanging from the rearview mirror, right? You know what those are? Those are idols. I think they're a great conversation starter when I get in one of those vehicles and talk about what does that mean to you and all of that. But it's real. It's around us. And did you know that some of the shops in our malls and our surroundings are set up to actually sell and market idols? Did you know that? If you go even just across the street, I don't even know for sure, but I'm 99.9% sure because they're all over the place. You could walk in a store that would have Buddhas that you can buy. Not only Buddhas, but then other idols that you don't even know what is. See, you'd recognize Buddha, and most of you probably wouldn't buy a Buddha, right? Because you would say, oh, no, that's a Buddha. That's bad. But then you might buy something else that you don't even know what is, but it's an idol that's been created for a god that you don't even know anything about. And sometimes you're buying T-shirts, and these T-shirts have beautiful designs on them and everything, but sometimes, did you know that some of those designs are actually tribute to a god in other religions? Who knows anything about the mandala? You seen the mandala? It's beautiful, but it's about Eastern religion. We get tattoos and don't even realize what they mean because it's just a pretty picture. But again, most of you are smart, and you're not even buying the Buddhas at the shop or anything like that, and you're switched on. But it goes deeper and deeper. Whatever we serve other than the true and living God is an idol. Did you know that your home can be an idol? Your car can be an idol? Your bank account can be an idol? No, I know, uni students and high school students, I know you're not idolizing any of that now. But did you know technology can be an idol? The latest and greatest. You know, when traveling overseas, I would go to places where people didn't hardly have food to eat, but they had the latest iPhones. They're sacrificing to have that. Recreation can be an idol. Holidays, or boats, caravans, those kinds of things. Now, none of the things that I just talked about are bad. They're all fine. But when we put them and we elevate them in a place higher than God in our lives, when we're willing to sacrifice for those things, sacrifice our time and attention that we would give to God, then it becomes an idol. And the list is endless of what that might include. Could be alcohol, could be drugs, could be sex, could be power and fame, could be music, could be sport. I could go on and on and on, but you fill in the blank. What is it for you that maybe sometimes gets too much attention? Warren Wiersbe said it this way: that on which I center my attention and affection and for which I am willing to sacrifice is my God. And if it isn't Jesus Christ, then it's an idol. I think we need to have a check in our lives. I saw another pastor actually this afternoon, and he saw my t-shirt, "False Idols, what's that about?" I told him, "Stick around and see." He said, "You think I need to?" I said, "I think we all need to sometimes to have a check. Am I holding anything up as an idol in my life? Am I putting anything before God in my life?" Jeremiah, in verse 16, he talks about this king of nations being greater than all the gods, and he gives him another name, the Lord of Heaven's Armies. He says this: "But the God of Israel is no idol. He is the creator of everything that exists, including Israel, his own special possession. The Lord of Heaven's Armies is his name." That's the name Yahweh Sabaoth. Yahweh Sabaoth, it means Lord of Heaven's Armies, or Lord of Hosts, it may say. See, as the king of nations, he is the commander of a mighty angelic army that is serving him, following him to accomplish his plans and his purposes. He leads a legion of angels, of followers. They're innumerable in the heavenly realms. Guys, it's a huge spiritual battle. A few weeks ago, Deanna was talking about this, and if you didn't hear that message, I would commend that to you. Go listen to it, not because she's my wife and it's great and wonderful, but it's great and wonderful, and it was amazing, and we need to take that on board. There is a real spiritual battle out there. But the beautiful thing is that the Lord of Heaven's Armies is greater than Satan and his armies. In fact, when Satan was kicked out of heaven, it said that Satan and a third of the angels were thrown out of heaven. A third of the angels followed him. You know what that means? That Yahweh Sabaoth has two-thirds of the angels left. Twice as many. He is greater. He has greater armies to fulfill his plans and purposes. As the king of the nation, he has the backing because of his armies. In 1 Samuel chapter 17, it's translated Lord of Hosts, and it refers to God not only being the Lord of Heaven's armies, but also the Lord of human armies. When we look at the nations around our world and the armies that have been developed there, and we're worried about the wars and everything that's going on around there, it tells us that God, Yahweh Sabaoth, is the king over those armies too. He is the ruler. He is the leader. And our Western world, our rulers aren't called kings usually. In the USA, they say the president is the leader of the free world, right? And currently, the one that's there actually believes that, I think. But he's still subject to God, the king of all nations. No matter how powerful you get on this planet, God is more powerful. He raises kings up and he takes them down. Calling him Lord of Hosts, another way that's used in the Old Testament, is that it was there to remind Israel they should not be worshiping celestial bodies like the sun, the moon, and the stars. He is the Lord of Hosts. It's very common in the ancient and Near East to worship the sun, moon, and stars. For us, not so much, but have you heard of astrology? The zodiac, your signs, things like that? It's all the same. It's all linked in. We need to be careful that before these things creep in and we don't even know it. That's how the enemy works. He's subtle. But then we need to ask ourselves, this king of nations, this Yahweh Sabaoth, Lord of Heaven's Armies, what kind of king is this king? Psalm chapter 113 tells us he's a king of justice. It says, "Who can be compared with the Lord our God? Who is enthroned on high? He stoops to look down on heaven and on earth. He lifts the poor from the dust and the needy from the garbage dump. He sets them among princes, even the princes of his own people. He gives the childless woman a family, making her a happy mother. Praise the Lord." There are countless passages that talk about our God, Yahweh Sabaoth, being a God of justice, the King of the nations, ruling the nations with justice. But there's nowhere better exemplified than seeing him as the King of justice than in Luke chapter 4, talking about Jesus. When he sent Jesus to this earth, Jesus said this, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim that captives will be released, that blind will see, that the oppressed will be set free." See, the King of nations is a just ruler. He hates the mistreatment of the poor. He advocates for the oppressed. He rescues those who are captive, and he brings freedom to those who are bound. We love that fact, don't we, that he's a God of justice? Organizations all over the world are built around the justice of God. And we want to align with those organizations. That's why we do the ping pong-a-thon. We've raised $21,000, and we need to make that $25,000, by the way. So if you still haven't given, or even if you've given, go double it. Come on, you can do that. It's easy. Just go. Right now, get on your phone and do it. No, actually, don't. Do it after, when you're having a coffee. We like to partner with things like that. That's why we reach out to the poor in our own community and provide food and other services for them when they're hurting and marginalized, because we believe God wants that to happen. That's why we run Base Camp to offer respite to families with children and young adults living with them that have disabilities, because we believe that they are marginalized and on the edges of society many times, and they need that support. We believe that God loves people who are poor and marginalized, and he wants us helping out. This is why we take the good news, the gospel of Christ, to our community and around the world, because we believe that he's a God of justice. But friends, there's another side to the justice coin, and you're not going to be excited about this. I'm not excited about it. I don't even want to preach this part of it. But the other side of him being the King of justice, the God of justice, is that he's the King of judgment. He is a God of judgment. Psalm 82 says this, "God presides over heaven's court. He pronounces judgment on the heavenly beings. How long will you hand down unjust decisions by favoring the wicked? Give justice to the poor and the orphan." We like that. "Uphold the rights of the oppressed and the destitute." Yay. "Rescue the poor and helpless. Deliver them from the grasp of evil people." Yes. "Rise up, O God, and judge the earth, for all the nations belong to you." See, if God is a just king, there also must be judgment. Justice can't happen without judgment. Because the reason justice doesn't happen is because there are evil people like you and me in the world. And we do bad things. And we need God to set that straight so he can provide justice for those that we oppress. Maybe it's not you and me oppressing people. Hopefully it's not us, day in and day out, but sometimes in our lives, we might be. We don't like to think about God as a king who judges, at least when it comes to us. When it's other people, it's okay. We're okay if he sends judgment on pedophiles. We're okay if he judges sex traffickers. We're okay if he judges rapists and murderers. We think that's good. That's God exercising his justice. He's also exercising judgment. You see that? See how that works? For him to give someone justice, he's got to judge someone else. But it hits closer to home sometimes, and that's when we're not as okay with it. We're not okay when he wants us to bring our lives under his authority, when he wants us to submit to him, when he wants to take away those things that we've set up as our own idols, because that's painful for us, that hurts, that causes us to lose something, and we don't like that side of it. When he wants us to sacrifice ourselves, our stuff, and our sin to come under his authority and submit to his kingship, we struggle with that. James, the brother of Jesus, summed it up really nicely, looking at this whole balance between God being a God of justice and judgment. He says this in James chapter 5, "Look here, you rich people, weep and groan with anguish because of all the terrible troubles ahead of you. Your wealth is rotting away, and your fine clothes are moth-eaten rags. Your gold and silver are corroded. The very wealth you were counting on will eat away your flesh like fire. This corroded treasure you have hoarded will testify against you on the day of judgment. For listen, hear the cries of the field workers whom you have cheated of their pay. The cries of those who harvest your fields have reached the ears of, get this, the Lord of heaven's armies. That is sobering. We just talked about the Lord of heaven's armies and how powerful he is and that he can be a God of judgment. And then James marries, you've mistreated people. You've robbed people. You've oppressed people. And the Lord of heaven's armies heard their cries. That means the Lord of heaven's armies will act on their behalf. So as we wrap things up here tonight, I want you to understand that God is the King of nations. He's high above all kings and rulers. So, you know, when we see the world in a bad place and we see rulers that are set up and we think, oh my goodness, what's going on there? Why is he in place or she in place? God's got that. He's the King of nations. They're subject to him. Nothing's happened without his permission. Let him be the King of nations. He is also Yahweh Sabaoth, the Lord of heaven's armies. He has an army of angelic beings fighting our battles, fighting for the souls of human beings, fighting for your soul and your life. His rule is just and right. That means he fights for justice, but that also includes judgment. See, too often, our view of God is too small, and it's a bit mixed up sometimes. We view God often as our genie in a bottle, right? Do you know what a genie in a bottle is, right? You find a bottle, and it's a magic bottle, and it's got a genie in it, and you rub it, and you get three wishes, right? Anybody familiar with that? Yeah? Okay. Young people don't know about genies in a bottle. Oh, no. We have so much work to do, older people. But we think God's like that, where I want God in my life so that he can make all my wishes come true. He can fulfill all of my dreams. All of my hopes are going to happen because God's on my side. We like that. But friends, God is not our genie in a bottle. He is our general in a battle. There is a battle that is going on that you and I ignore most of the time because we don't see it physically in front of us. If we saw armies coming into the car park with guns and tanks and all that coming after us, we would say, hey, we better be alert and ready, right? We don't see that. But you know what's out there? Satan's armies attacking us. But see, God is our general in that battle. His armies are greater than Satan's armies. That's the way we need to view God. Because if we view God as the general in the battle instead of the genie in the bottle, that's going to change our perspective about everything. When we come to God, we won't be coming to him with self-centered things that just wants to make our life comfortable and make us happy. We'll be coming to God desperate because we realize that the souls of people are at stake. That the future of people are at stake that are marginalized, that are oppressed and all that. That he wants to fight for them and he wants us fighting for them with him. It changes our perspective. We stop looking to our own idols, our money and our stuff, other people, experiences in our life to fulfill us and make us happy. And we start looking to the God who is Yahweh Sabaoth, Lord of heaven's armies, to guide us, to lead us. He's the King of nations. The remedy for idolatry in your life and mine is for us to simply do this, for us to get caught up in the majesty and the grandeur of the true and living God, the one who is the everlasting King of all nations, our general in the battle. We need to look to him with all of our troubles and our worries. We need to look to him for our comfort and peace in this life and in the next. And we need to praise and worship him as he leads the angel armies and us into battle. The song says, and you can stand now, we're about to sing this. I know who goes before me. I know who stands behind. The God of angel armies is always by my side. The one who reigns forever, he is a friend of mine. The God of angel armies is always by my side. I want you to sing that with the band now as a declaration, not as a closing song to tick it off the box so that we can leave. But I want you to think about the words. I know who stands before me. I know who goes behind. The God of angels' armies is always by my side. Know that deep down inside today. And I want you to sing.